the moment is Ronaldo! Brilliant! And it's Arshinger, there'll be 2 minutes of stoppage time. Man in the box if he can get it across, and he has it off the line! Shot and follow-up, and it's turned in! And surely this time, Theo Walcott has won it! Manchester United have done all they can. That Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero! Let's call this Euro header! And talk about an instant impact! Arsenal really are motoring now!
Lui, Francesco Totti, gran gol, Roma! Strepitoso in questa lì!
Fabregas, it's Nasri. Can he go all the way here? Still Nasri, looks Rashadi! Wonderful play from Arsenal! Arsene Wenger's philosophy put into practice, and not even Barcelona can come up with an answer.
And all the family per il vince della prima metà.
I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again. So watch it, drink it in.
Jack Wilshere to Zola, Giroud, Giroud again, Jack Wilshere. It's stunning from Arsenal.
Bradley swings it in invitingly. Oh my word! It's gone straight in. It's Bradley.
Joe, I don't know why Canada can't score goals.
It's the age-old thing, and I was so frustrated watching. And I know we're playing Mexico, and what am I expecting? But I still expect us...
Can't score a goal?
Yeah, something, right? And then, listen, it's a good thing that we've had a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, because right after it, I was decompressed. Yeah, I was ready to rock and roll. I was like, oh, you know what? This is what's... And I said, okay, wait a second.
I learned that the hard way from watching Arsenal, that you have to take a couple of days off before you get on the air and start spewing. So,
you know, as a coach, you talk about, you know, a 24-hour rule when someone's upset.
Yeah.
Let's wait 24 hours. Yeah. I waited 48. So, I mean, I get it. And today's guest is really going to put it in perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is good, you know. But I was just really upset, you know. I'm like, why do we always get our hopes up? But again, it's not over.
It's not over.
We still have a chance.
It's harder, but it's not over.
It's harder, but I mean, listen, you know, teams, this is Mexico. We're going to mention that later.
Yeah.
They're okay.
They're all right.
They're very good. And, you know, going to the Azteca is no easy task.
You told me Brazil doesn't even do well there, so.
Big teams don't get results in the Azteca. Like, so, you know, it's a tough place to play, and they are a world-class team. But, you know, if you talk to me on right after the game, the first game, I wasn't too happy.
Yeah, neither was I.
But
I wasn't too happy with the play or the team selection.
Yeah,
we want
them to do well.
Different subject for a different day. And I was also looking at, before we get into what we're going to talk about, I was also looking at, because I know we talked about Gershon Kofi and Camilo, and there's the defender from Montreal, Camara, I believe his last name is, from French international.
Yeah. You're right.
They're all permanent residents now, so what are we doing? But anyways, we'll talk about that.
These are the quick fixes, right?
That's our
theme. Quick fix versus long-term thing.
But that's other teams are doing that as well.
For sure.
I don't know why Canada's not doing that. But anyways. Welcome to another episode of the Football Weekly Podcast. We're your hosts, Joe and Reggie. Tonight, we have a very special guest.
Oh, it's been a long time coming, Reg.
Long time coming. We've been trying to line this guy up for a long time. We finally wrangled him. So we have former TFC defender, former Canadian men's national team member as well, Marco Retta, with us in the. Actually, you know what? We're going to do, the whole show is going to be his interview.
It's got to be. Marco needs a whole show, doesn't he?
Definitely. And for what we paid to get him,
oh man,
you better believe it, he's going to be on the whole show. We got to cost us a lot. We got to get our money's worth, definitely. So, as usual, you can subscribe to our podcast from our website, www.footballweekly.com. We're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, iTunes. You can subscribe through all of those podcatchers for free. You can subscribe via email. There's a form. There's tons of ways you can get to us. Our Twitter account is @football_weekly. If you have anything witty to say, you can get to us. Definitely give us a follow. We have some new members of the Football Weekly family on Twitter.
Dane St. Clair.
Dane St. Clair.
Goalkeeper from the University of Maryland. He's part of the U-20 Canada player pool. Made an appearance with the U-18 Canadian team. Dynamite goalkeeper. I promise you, this is going to be, I don't know, he is, but he's going to be even better. He's going to be one of those guys we're going to be talking about for a long time. Great goalkeeper from the University of Maryland, Dane St. Clair. Thank you, Dane.
Thank you. Thank you for the follow. Thank you for the follow. We also have George Villalobos, who's following us as well, and the two coaches from the University of Buffalo, Stu Riddle and Roger Lane. And we also want to give a special shout out to Akusti Salonen from Finland.
Thank you.
He's an Everton fan, but it takes all kinds, right? So thank you for the follow, and thank you for retweeting our stuff, definitely.
Yeah, the continued support. Thank you.
So let's get into this.
I'm ready.
Let's go. So sit back, relax, and get stuck in with the Football Weekly podcast, and we have our special interview with Marco Retta coming up after this.
Torres. Now it drops for Fabregas, who looks for any.
So tonight's special guest, we have a 12-year pro, former Canadian national team member, and former defender for our beloved Toronto FC. We have Marco Retta on the line. Marco, welcome to the Football Weekly podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you, Marco.
Marco, what I'd like to start off all of our interviews with is a background of the guys that we're going to be talking to. If you don't mind, can you just run down a little bit of your youth career? I know you played in the GTA area, and I also know you went the NCAA route as well. So if you don't mind telling the people a little bit about your background.
Sure. Grew up playing for a local club here in the GTA, Woodbridge Soccer Club. Pretty much spent my entire youth career there. At the under-19 age group, which was sort of an extension of youth soccer, some years ago, I decided to join a team called Moulton Bullets, which at that time was probably one of the better teams in that age group, in the 77 age group.
I think Marco's being a little bit modest there. That was a very good team. A lot of Canadian internationals that came from that team.
Yeah, there were a few. Myself, Robbie Aristodemo, Jason Bent, and Paul Stalteri played on that team. You know, guys that eventually made it to the senior men's national team. So we were quite successful that year. We ended up winning the Robbie, which was, at that time was a big tournament. Yes. The Ontario Cup and the Canadian National Championship. And from there, we did some showcases in the U.S. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have several schools have a look at me and show some interest, and I finally decided to go to Winthrop University. It was an experience, let me say. just coming from Toronto and the lifestyle here, you know, going to live in the South was certainly an adjustment for me.
Definitely.
I won't say that I'm the most patient person, but I've had to waiting in line at McDonald's at 11 p.m. at night wasn't always fun. you know, all jokes aside, it was a good experience. I stayed there for 2 years. You know, after my second season at Winthrop, I got a call from, at that time, the under-20 coach, Bruce Twomley, for Canada. Mm-hmm. And he invited me into a camp. It was probably 3-4 weeks before Canada was going to Malaysia for the under-20 World Cup. And they were looking for another defender, and I impressed at the camp. And, you know, again, fortunate enough to go to the under-20 World Cup. After my second year at Winthrop, I decided to essentially turn pro. I mean, at that time, Toronto Lynx was the local pro team here in the city, and I began playing for them. Continued my education at York University, and then after a year and a half at York, again, I put education on hold because we were going for Olympic qualifying, and you know, we had to make some certain sacrifices because we were traveling to and from Vancouver several times throughout the year, where school was going to be a little bit difficult. So I concentrated on Toronto Lynx and making the Canadian Olympic team. And then after qualifying, we didn't qualify, you know, which is shocking for a Canadian team not to qualify for a World Cup. But
we'll talk about that.
You know, I decided to put school on hold and focus full time on a playing career. And I did a bit of the indoor outdoor. I did that for about a year and a half. So I played outdoor back then was the A-League, which yes. which I guess today would be the equivalent of USL Pro or NASL yes. With Toronto Lynx. And then I played in the Missile, a major indoor
yes,
soccer
sir.
League with the Cleveland Force.
Yes.
And
love the names of that league,
lucky enough to play with the Canadian legend Hector Marinaro Jr.
Oh, amazing. Hamilton Steelers.
Yeah, he was didn't run much, but boy, was he good with the ball. I think the turning point really came for me. I was 21, 22, and I had already been on a trial in Europe at a second division club in Austria, and it, you know, just wasn't for me at the time. And you know, I think I just wasn't ready. I wasn't mature enough. I wasn't ready to leave home and you know, take that leap forward where I'm living away from home full time. But we played a game, a preseason or sort of mid-season game against 1860 Munich here
wow.
in Toronto. It was held at York University.
Wow.
And after playing that game, I impressed a local agent here enough. And he said, you know, do you want to go on some trials in Europe? And I think at that point, a year or so later, I was, you know, I was hungry for it. I wanted it, you know, it was,
right.
Not that the soccer here was bad or anything, but I just felt like I was ready to take a step to play at a higher level.
Fantastic.
And certainly go for making a career out of it. You know, just have a go for it. So I went to trial on Norway, at a small club. Sogndal is the name of the club. It's a town of 7,000 people.
Wow.
And at that time, they were in the top league in Norway. And they were midway through the season, and they had lost their two center backs. One of them had broken his leg, so he was out for the season. And they had 8 points. And usually in that league, 30 points got you, you know, didn't get you relegated. 30
right.
points was safe.
Right.
So I went on trial, and at the same time I was on trial, there was a boy from the Ivory Coast. Another center back. Whatever have you, long story short, the two of us just clicked together and we showed the club enough. And I spoke a little bit of French and he spoke very little English. And we complimented each other well. You know, his strengths were my weaknesses and vice versa.
Right.
So it just clicked and we managed to do very well for the club. You know, we ended up with 35 points,
oh,
well above relegation zone. And so we did well. And I, you know, from Norway, I spent 2 or 3 years at this club. Then I made a move to Denmark.
Yes.
One of the bigger clubs in Denmark. So, yes.
Marco, how many years you spent in Europe? So we could tell the listeners. I mean, I know.
Overall, I spent 6 years in Europe.
Fantastic.
So I was 4 years in Norway and 2 years in Denmark.
Amazing.
And again, it was awesome. You know, when I went over initially, it was just like, yeah, I'm just having fun and I'm just going to have a go for it. I'm
right.
still 21, 22, 23.
Yes.
No responsibilities.
Yeah, yeah. Time to do it, right? Yeah.
I could go home at any time. My parents are there. They're there to support me. I always had a bed in the house, you know?
Yeah.
So
we
just
know
like
that, yeah.
I'm just gonna have a go for it. That
yeah.
that was the attitude that I have and that I had. And I just wanted to get better. Every
yeah.
year I wanted
That's
to feel like,
points.
You know what, I'm getting better and I'm getting better. And I worked hard. I worked hard for it.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe, you've seen me run, so you know that I had to work hard for it.
I am right there with you. At least your steps were longer than mine. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So you can imagine how hard I had to work.
I had that goal for him.
Yeah.
But it took like 10 yards for those steps to get bigger and bigger and faster and faster.
You know, Marco, we talk a lot about, and this is a great story. And like me and Reggie have been, you know, saying we're going to have Marco on because of all these things. And, you know, with all due respect to everyone, and there, obviously there have been great people, and we don't always hear about that, especially when we talk about Canadian soccer, that did help you along the way. And with all due respect to them, and there are a lot of those guys that helped you out, this seems like it's happened, you know, despite of what we've had going on, like despite of the system. Like, and I know when we talked about, you mentioned Paul Stoltieri, Jason Bent, and Robbie Versidemo too. Is it fair to say that you guys, quote unquote, made it somewhere, made a pro career, despite what was happening here? It was almost like there was only a few situations that were good. Is that fair to say, unfair? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think it's pretty fair to say. I mean, there definitely wasn't any LTPD when I was around. And I was a late bloomer. Like, you know, at 13, 14, 15, 16, I had plenty of coaches say, pal, you're not going anywhere. A scholarship, maybe. And then, you know, I played on the under-20 team and on the Olympic team, and I was never quite good enough to be a regular starter. And again, you know, the coaches there said, you know, you're probably never going to make it to the senior men's national team. You know, try to eke out a pro career for yourself. But I just kept grinding away. Like again, I was a hard worker, and I didn't always put the attitude that no one's going to outwork me. And I needed to work hard because I wasn't exactly gifted naturally, and that's being polite. So I needed to work hard, and I just kept grinding away. And I, you know, doors opened along the way. Like, you get lucky, and you get coaches that see the good things, and I think that's what separates Canada from Europe. The attitude in Europe is, well, we look at the positive things about the player. There's no perfect player out there.
Interesting. See,
every player is going to have their weaknesses and their strengths. We're going to focus on the strengths, and then maybe, you know, depending on his position, we're going to pair him with someone who sort of offsets those weaknesses and adds to, you know, they complement each other. Because, you know, that's football. It's a team game, and you have to have balance in the team, and you're not going to have 11 thoroughbreds unless you're Barcelona. And every, you know, every player is going to have their weaknesses. So for me, like, that was sort of eye-opening, where I, for the first time when I went to Europe, the coach was like, you know, it's okay. You're not fast. You're not athletic. We get it. But, you know, you're a good leader, and you talk, and you can organize people in front of you, and you're
right.
You can pass the ball.
Yeah,
so,
I imagine,
you know,
that.
We're going to put someone beside you who's going to tackle, and he's going to win everything in the air, and you just clean up and make sure he knows exactly where to go.
Right.
And, you know, and that was eye-opening for me. So now I'm trying to bring that into the coaching, and, you know, it's difficult, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, because sometimes I got to remind myself that, you know, look at the strengths of the players, because I think here in Canada we get bogged down with,
that's a good point,
well, he can't do this or she can't do this, and rather than, well, no, but they can do this and they can do that.
You know, Marco, I'm so glad you mentioned your experiences, and I said this, you know, over a beer for years, and now I'm hopefully getting a few more people crazy enough to listen. But, you know, I always said that your group, I'm a 77 too, but you guys that went over and did these special things, like yourself and Paul Stalteri, just to name a few, and so on. I said, I think we're only going to start to change when, of course, we need a systematic changeover. We're going to talk a bit about that and so on. You mentioned long-term player development. But until you guys come back and have a chance to share this in an environment with young players and talk about it. I've always said that. So when these guys come back and they start to help young players, maybe we'll start to see a changeover. So I'm very glad that you mentioned that. You know, Reggie, focusing on the good of players. You know, I mean, and again, we joke all the time with Marco, and Marco can be the driest, funniest guy. Yeah, but, you know, even he's saying focusing on what they can do well and then pairing them. That's such an interesting point. There you have that knowledge that we can't really, you know, you've been there, so you can tell us about that, right? So you have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always willing to share, for sure. You know, for me, the frustrating thing is, you know, where is the sort of avenue for people to listen?
Yeah.
You know, everyone's an expert here. You know, I get it. You know, we'd love to pat ourselves on the back, for sure, without ever having accomplished anything. You know, we have a Canadian Soccer Hall of Fame, but what have we accomplished? Like, really, what have we, a one World
it's
Cup?
True. Yep. It's true.
But, you know, we've done some good things in the game. I think it's changing. You're right, Joe. There's more of us that have played the game at a higher level that are involved with kids. For me, there's not enough.
Yes,
agreed. There needs to be more and more and more and more. You know, you still see coaches on the sidelines with telling kids things and habits and some of the environments that are out there that, you know, you and I will look at and be like, wow, how old school is that?
Yeah.
You know, how old school is that? Does he get it or does she get it? Yeah, I mean, the hope is it's just more of us.
Discussion, working together, right? Discussion, working together, right? I mean.
For me, that's a big frustration. There are very few.
Right.
Like, when I got into coaching initially, it was, you know, the stories that I kept hearing were, well, and I don't disagree with them. The non-professional people, the non-soccer people, they refuse to work together.
Yes.
you know, they refuse to work together. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, and I've been coaching now for eight, 9 years, is the soccer people, the guys who get it, the guys who apparently, supposedly get it, they don't work together.
Buttonheads, all kinds. Yeah.
They don't share ideas. Yeah. They don't, this player is probably should go here because this is better for him.
Yes.
But, you know, there's still I want to keep this player because it might help me in the long run.
Well, there's still that attitude. We're going to talk about that a little bit later as well, because when we get to talking about the Mexico-Canada game, there's a couple of changes that I would have made or like to have seen in regards to players he brought in and personnel that was used. But before we get into all of that, I just wanted to ask you a question about the evolution of the Canadian player. And there's a ton of Canadian men and women going down to the NCAA and even going beyond that into pro leagues, whether it be MLS or even going the route that you took to go to Europe. Then and now, what do you see the differences in the preparation for the players and even the coaching, if it's any different from before or now, or is just that people are starting to discover the Canadian player?
That's a good question. I mean, I think there's environments out there, certainly whether it's club or academy, that are very good for the player.
Right.
Whether we're talking about coaches or facilities or infrastructure within the club or support from the club or backroom support, you know, like even goalkeeper coaches, you know, those little things or trainers, athletic trainers, you know, I think that stuff there has improved dramatically. I mean, I remember when I was 18, 19, I remember the fields we were training on. It varies. I rarely trained under lights. I didn't train under lights when I was 12 years old.
Right.
But kids are training under lights now, you know, and we used to train only in gyms in the winter. And now you've got
turf fields,
a ton of facilities, you know, with turf. And so I think there's more opportunities for the players to definitely make a go of it, you know, whether it's even just getting a scholarship or becoming a pro. I think there's no excuses for players. Well, I don't want to say no excuses, but there's fewer excuses for players now to improve, to develop. Having said that, I still think there's some shocking environments, but I think as a whole, the environments from when I was growing up to now are much, much, much better.
Sure.
You've got more professional clubs, you've got more professional academies, which just means money, right? It just means more money into the game and, you know, more opportunities for players. In regards to players being scouted to go to the U.S., I do not remember, and maybe Joe can correct me if I'm wrong, I do not recall any showcases in Toronto when I was growing up.
No, I agree.
It was always we had to travel to the U.S. to play.
Agreed.
We had to go to Dallas Cup.
That's
we had
right.
to go
exactly. Yes.
The Capital Cup.
That's right. Those are the ones. Yep.
That's it.
Right? So, you know, in that regard, you know, there's, I would say, maybe 10 local showcases here in the GTA, and then, you know, you've got one in Ottawa, and I'm sure there's others around the country.
Or teams traveling, Marco, to play preseason or spring games against, you know, universities. You don't see that. We never heard of that before.
No. Yeah, know? Absolutely. Yeah, so. I mean, so I think because of the success of some of the Canadian players that are, you know, coming out of MLS, or sorry, coming out of NCAA and going into MLS or other pro environments, I think it, you know, helped, you know, a lot of the Canadian players get on the radar of some of the U.S. coaches. But the same point is I think some of the U.S. coaches are having to look elsewhere because the competition for, you know, strong American players is so tough.
Good point. Marco, you know, we talked about a couple of things here. Coaches helping each other, working with each other. The Canadian player, Reggie, of course, that's a good point about, you know, how it's changed. Not being afraid of it. I mean, I remember we talked to him, we had him on our show as well. Mathieu Laurent, who's at UAB, and he was with the U.S. U-17 World Cup a couple of years ago. I remember having a conversation at one of the showcases where I introduced him to Marco, and Marco had a great conversation with him. And I thought, wow, there's a great experience. And I think Paul Stalteri was there as well, by the way. And, you know, you guys are talking to him. And I think that's invaluable. And that's the kind of things where, you know, you're not really feeling you know, threatened. You know, it's like, hey, Marco, please talk to him. Like, he's quote unquote my player, but that's not, you know, talk to him. You can give him stuff that's, you know, we won't find in the textbook, and maybe it's not going to be brought up in a training session. And he still talks about that to this day. You know, he's still keeping close contact, and he said, you know, it's a big deal for him to talk to someone who's been there, done that. So,
yeah, that's good, man. I mean, thanks for sharing that. I mean, yeah, he's a great kid. I mean, you did a great job with him. It's obvious. He's going to turn out to be a far better player than I was, which is great. So, but we get it, Joe. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. We're, you know, I think there's more of us, but it's got to be a lot more where technical guys, you know, we'll share ideas and talk about players and try to help each other's players out. And, you know, I'd like to see more of that. I just like to see more of that.
I can't believe that happens, that a player would come from a club and, or the coaches wouldn't be talking about a player that's going to be an excellent player.
Yeah, it's scary. It's the old adage. Mark will tell you too. I think the bigger the problem is that we're sometimes, not always, and maybe we all fell into this too. So it's, you know, winning a trophy is compared to, hey, why don't we say, hey, we helped this kid get to the national program. Well, we helped this kid become a pro.
That's
right?
What it is. I thought that's what the whole point was. I thought no.
Yeah, it is for some. no, but it's. I mean, Joe's hit it spot on. There's still a mentality for. You know, how many trophies can I win? This is how I'm going to validate myself as a coach. Mm. And I think part of the problem is a lack of sort of quote unquote education for that coach. Right. But the other problem is that we're not in a soccer culture where, you know, organizations or even coaches are rewarded for passing a player on,
a
player to go on to a pro team or a national team. You know, we are a pro club here in Toronto, you know, that does, I think, a lot of good things for the game in this city. They don't even acknowledge that you've sent the player on trial to them, you know, like, you know, it's not even an email. Like, yeah, one of your players was here.
Wow,
that's a great point, Marco.
You know, in Europe, develop a player, you're going to get validation, you're going to get a financial reward for them.
Yes.
You know, I don't think any coach would, you know, not support passing their player on to a pro club if there was a validation, if there was a financial reward that goes back into your program so that you can continue to support it, maybe put into another player so that eventually he's, you know, and in Europe that happens, where here we just don't have that soccer culture. So coaches feel like, well, you know, what am I going to develop? For me, the best for me to get validated as a coach is my trophy cabinet, you know? Like,
right.
I put some blame on the coach himself, but I also think the lack of really soccer culture is partly responsible.
Yeah, and that instant gratification thing too, right?
Well, I'm glad you brought up our pro team, because the next question I'm going to ask is about leagues in Canada. And I think Joe and I have discussed this many times on the show. We've had guests come in and discuss it as well. The missing link, I think, to Canada becoming a power in the world of soccer, we should be, with the melting pot of people that we have here, we should be way better than we are and ranked higher than we are. If you look at the example of the United States, what they've done with their domestic league and where they sit in the FIFA rankings, I know that they're a joke, but still they're up there and they're always up there.
Mm-hmm.
They're a powerhouse in CONCACAF, and it's always a tough game against them. But in your opinion, Why hasn't a domestic league been established in Canada? And I know there was, what was NASL was here? A CPSL, CSL. Why not? Why don't we have a league yet? Not to put you on the spot or anything.
The simple answer is money.
Right.
The simple answer is money. I don't think there's enough people willing to invest the money, because it's going to be a long-term project for sure. And I also think now sort of the MLS has established itself in this market.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I think there's some rumblings and rumors that the CSA is trying to begin a D2/D3 professional league, you know, with franchises across the country. It's a good question. I mean, it's never survived here in the past. It, you know, there's tons of logistical issues, travel being one of them. So it's never worked in the past. I think sort of the CSA, and I think a lot of the soccer supporters here in this country are frustrated with the MLS because it does very little for Canadian soccer, really. Like, I mean, it pumps a little bit money into youth soccer and Toronto FC Academy, and that's all great. But in terms of Canadian players getting real pro opportunities, you know, it's few. It's not many. I mean, you can argue that, yes, the Canadian player is not good enough yet, or the Canadian player has to be good enough to warrant those more of those pro opportunities. But I think it's nice if you have a Canadian league that you can take the lumps down the road and give a 20, 21, 22, even 18-year-old chances, meaning he's going to play week in, week out, yes, despite the results, and despite the up-and-down performances, because we believe in him and, you know, he's got a shot to make it as a real pro. And those chances in MLS for young Canadians, they haven't happened yet. And I think that's sort of the frustration where the CSA is saying, no, perhaps we need our own league. But again, it's going to take dollars and it's going to take investors that know for the first 10 years, they're going to lose a lot of money.
Again, that avoidance of that instant gratification thing and something that's going to be worth it down the road. You know, Mark, we talked about players playing without having the pressure of, oh, I'm not going to be in there if something goes wrong. Of course, we want them to feel competitive pressure, and we want them to be in bigger games, but they need, at that level, and the league you're talking about, and, you know, again, hopefully the CSA is thinking about, would be exactly to do that, to foster them getting better weekly, to hopefully get them ready for, well, playing a qualifier in the CONCACAF region with all that pressure where, you know, it's not the first time they'd be in that kind of environment. Because, I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, Toronto Lynx, for all of the issues that they had back in the day, when I was playing, was, you know, I don't go to Europe. Paul Stalteri doesn't go to Europe. Atiba Hutchinson maybe doesn't go to Europe. Chris Pozniak doesn't go to Europe. Dwayne De Rosario maybe doesn't go to MLS. Adrian Saru maybe doesn't go to Europe. Pat Onstad maybe doesn't have an MLS career. You know, those things maybe don't happen if Toronto Lynx is not here and we're not at 20, 21, 22 playing tough games in a pro environment.
That's a great point.
With a coach that said, you know what, I want to give young Canadians a chance. And instead of one Canadian on the field, it's eight Canadians on the field.
Yes.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, there's good Canadian players that need those opportunities. And in MLS, you know, we're not getting them. We're definitely not getting them now. And maybe there's better players than them. But, you know, I'd argue that some of the American kids coming out of college probably aren't too much better than a lot of the guys playing in League One right now.
That's a great point. That's a great point, Marco. I mean, and it's not enough to be happy that we, yes, have MLS, you know, Canadians on an MLS roster, but if you're not getting a regular game, and again, it's a few of them on the TFC roster, if you're not getting a regular game, how can they improve? How can they be expected to excel when called upon, when they're not called upon enough?
Well, I think we're going to have, you're going to have problems within the MLS. You're going to see players from Europe are getting younger and younger coming over here to play in the MLS, correct? So you have a guy, I don't know, who just came over that just took a spot? I don't even know. How old is Jovinko?
He's not that old, but what is he?
29? Yeah. 28?
Yeah.
30 maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's at the same time, and I'm not saying TFC needs Jovinko, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, you might be taking away time from someone like Jordan Hamilton or even Jay Chapman, right? So we have to, MLS has to look at that as well. Even the Canadian teams have to look at that as well.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think USL, the Toronto FC 2
yes.
is a huge step in the right direction because
sure,
I think
yes.
that's where the Canadian kids can get a lot of opportunity, you know, in a pro environment and playing against good, you know, they're playing yes. against other pros.
And Marco, there's another opportunity here, and I'll say it for you. Again, two of your former teammates, Jason Bent and Chris Pozniak, who are doing a great job there with TFC 2. I mean, we'd be remiss not to mention that. And there it is, hopefully bridging a gap there. So I talk about a Canadian players who've been there. They're Canadian coaches now and hopefully helping a lot of those Canadian players. And there are a few of them there. Correct, Marco, right? Like we have.
Absolutely, yeah. absolutely. Yeah, I mean, both coaches believe in the Canadian player. They want to develop the Canadian player. You know, they played a 98, which is an under-17 player, in their first match against New York Red Bull last weekend. You know, those are the opportunities that we need, that the Canadian players need. What it does is, you know, even any academy players that come through,
yes.
it just gives them a bigger window to make it as a pro. Whereas in the past, you know, kids that came through the TFC Academy, it was 1 or 2 years, and if they're not good enough quite yet for the first team, we're just, you know, we're going to just throw them by the wayside, essentially. Yes. And those kids were still 21, 22, maybe 23. Whereas now those kids coming through the academy at 18, 19, 20, you know, they'll have a bigger, larger window, maybe 3-4 years now, where they can develop and keep getting games in a pro environment, good coaches,
yes.
And, you know, increase their chances to make it into the first team, into MLS, you know, the higher level.
And I think it's on even on the you know, the average fan too. Go out and see. Bring your kids. Go watch a TFC 2
yeah,
game.
Exactly.
It's in Vaughan.
Right.
You know, it's not hard to get to and so on. And it's at the, you know, the soccer center there. And it's a great experience. Take them out there and you're going to see, you know, players that are playing for the first team as well. You know, they're getting, like, you know, Mark Bloom was there this week playing with them and so on. And, you know, it's a great experience too. So it's on us too. I think you said it earlier before in a roundabout way, you know, in Toronto we tend to support, you know, the big ticket when we're not really supporting the grassroots stuff. So it's on us too as well, I think.
Absolutely. I agree with you, you know, 1,000%. You know, it used to be, well, we're only going to watch Serie A games.
Yeah.
And, you know, screw the local soccer. And now it's become we're only going to watch the MLS games and screw everything else yeah. below it.
Right.
But yeah, I believe, you know, I think you're spot on. I don't think the casual fan that goes to an MLS game is going to go watch the Toronto FC 2 game, but I think a soccer or a soccer family or people that are involved in the game, they absolutely need to go and support this. And you raise a point there. I don't think, you know, going back to soccer culture, I don't think kids watch enough soccer. I don't think
Agreed.
There's so much soccer on TV now that, and kids, I think, are busy playing PlayStation.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, you learn things watching the game. Go watch games live, pro games. Look at the guy who's playing your position. See what he does.
Yeah.
See what he does with the ball, off the ball. What are his habits? You know, I don't think we're there yet where enough kids are experiencing those things.
Good point, Marco.
Well, I know you're heavily involved in the youth development of the youth soccer player here in Canada. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Power Soccer?
Yeah, I've been working now at Power for, I'd say, 6 years, probably 3 years full-time. I'm the current director of coaching. Power's been around as an academy for 6-7 years. Started out as a camp sort of soccer school organization before that. Again, we're working with players where we just want players to keep improving. We try to put value in whatever we're, doing for the players. We've got coaches that are hungry. We've got coaches that want to put out good sessions. We've got coaches that want to continue their coach education. We've got good facilities. So we want players to keep developing, but we're certainly not afraid to push players on. So, you know, we've had two players over the last 18 months go to England, and they're signed to professional club academies there. So, we're progressive. We get it. We believe in long-term player development. We want players to move on. You know, and our goal is to make professionals. We realize that not everyone in our academy is going to be a professional player. And if we're lucky, maybe once every 5 years, a professional player is produced. You know, so that's sort of our goals. We have, you know, we do showcasing for the NCAA route and then what have you, and or the CIS. So yeah, I like the work there. I like the people that I work with and work for. I think that we're like-minded people. We understand the soccer landscape here, but we also want to get things better. We want to keep moving forward. We want the soccer culture to move forward. We want the soccer landscape here in the GTA to work, to move forward. And we want to work with people. We want, but I don't know, you know, if everyone that we come across is willing to work together.
Yeah. Marco, you mentioned that we want to push players along so that we don't have to continuously, and again, all due respect to anybody putting on the jersey and these guys that, you know, are doing their best, we want to be able to compete and have a chance to, you know, I mean, now let's talk about it, to, you know, get to the hex, right? Get to the next round of qualifying. And, I mean, without, I guess that's a good segue into what we just witnessed. Canada just played two games at the senior men's level against Mexico. 3-0 loss in Vancouver. And then, of course, just recently last night, a 2-0 loss in the Azteca, which, I mean, in the big picture, judging how we started on Friday night.
It's not bad.
It's not too bad. So, I mean, good news. Let's look at the good news. We still have a chance. The fate is in our own hands in terms of we have to play, I believe, Honduras and El Salvador, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But a little bit about Marco, a former Canadian international, professional player. I know you were watching. What are some of your thoughts?
I saw both games. Definitely, I didn't have high expectations going into both games for a result. I mean, the bottom line is they are better than us. They're better than us in every regard of the game. What was nice is, you know, finally you've got 54,000 people watching a soccer game here in Canada.
Right.
So I think that's one positive we can take from those games. I think there were some positive performances by individual players. I don't think the team performance was great on either game. Mm-hmm. But I think anyone in their right mind, and I think Floro in a room with nobody and no reporters would admit that he felt they were not going to get any points out of that game.
Yeah.
Fortunate for us is that, you know, Honduras and El Salvador tied, drew 2-2 in El Salvador. So it really does mean that these last two games, you know, we could and, you know what, we should qualify at least for the hex. I think we have enough good players to qualify for at least the hex. I don't think we're strong enough. And I don't think some of our informed players have the experience with qualifying yet to get a World Cup spot. But I do think we should qualify for the hex.
Do you think Floro got the team selection right, though? I mean, he left off some players off the roster completely that, you know, that might have been helpful out there.
Maybe not
against Mexico, because like you said, they're head and shoulders better than us. So you wouldn't expect to get points out of that. But for me, watching Marco, the performance, especially in the first game in Vancouver, was just, I thought it was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Just personally.
Yeah, I didn't think it was great. There were some bright spots. It could have been 5-0. I think we had two chances, I think.
Right.
Which was positive.
Right.
Yeah.
Junior Hoylett missed a sitter at the top of the box. Exactly. Laren, you know, he hits the wrong side of the ball and misses sort of a half chance on a tough angle.
Right. Yeah.
One of them goes in, maybe it's a different story, but I think Mexico looked dangerous. They always looked like they could break us down and create opportunities in front of goal. I think they took their foot off the gas a bit in Mexico and were comfortable. And after the first goal went in, we're sort of like, okay, we're going to win this game, no problem.
They look comfortable in Vancouver too, but we'll talk about that.
They look comfortable in Vancouver. I mean, in regards to team selection, you know, when I was playing for the national team, when I wasn't playing for the national team and didn't get called in, and I looked at the players selected, and I figured, there's got to be better players out there, man. We've got better players in this country.
Yeah.
And that's now, exactly then what I said. Went to the national team and was in like, camp.
This is what
I
we
was
got.
Like, you know what? These are the best players.
Yeah, this is what we got. Yeah.
And now I'm looking at it from abroad, and I'm thinking to myself, come on, there's got to be better players.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's honest.
So what I'm saying is, I think those are the best players available in this country. One or two selections, maybe Osorio, possibly. I think Russell Tybert coming off an injury.
Yes.
Maybe Osorio. I don't know if he's as sharp as he was last year. Do they make a difference? For me, all due respect to Jonathan. I know I played with Russell and I coached Jonathan. Neither are going to make a difference. We're still going to lose to Mexico in those games.
That's a point. Yeah.
In regards to some of the selections in his starting 11, you know, I got some question marks for sure for Benito. I don't understand why we continue to play players out of position.
Yeah, I think we all know what we're getting at there.
We spoke about that right before the show, just off air, Joe and I.
I'm just thinking of like, okay, I know we're going to talk about, I know he's taking a beating, Daniil Henry, I get it. But, I mean, I don't think it's partly his fault. I think he's playing out of position. And I think, Marco, you would know this better. Is he getting regular football? I mean, not with West Ham, the first team, but is he getting anything with the reserves? Like, is he playing? Like, cause that's a tough ask, too.
He was injured. He was out injured for a long time.
That's right, yes,
so
that's right.
Yeah. I want to say maybe two to three weeks.
Yes,
he was back in either playing for the reserve of West Ham or out on loan. I can't recall.
Yes.
But again, he's getting those minutes, I think, at center back. He certainly didn't play right back for Toronto FC. I don't think growing up he ever played right back.
Yeah, I don't remember him
playing there. I get it. Sometimes, you know, I'm a coach too, and you have ideas, and you think you know more than anybody else. And, you know, coaches have egos, and they think, I can make this guy here. I see him here. This other coach maybe sees him here, but I see him in this position. Yeah. But for me, it wasn't successful. It wasn't successful in any of the friendlies, and it wasn't successful in these last two games. I don't, you know, I think he did okay in the game in Mexico, but doesn't give enough going forward. And you know, we need all we can get going forward.
Yeah, we can't score goals.
If we're gonna have our left back and our right back get forward, then we need some quality with them going forward. And Daniil, fair enough to him. He's a center back. He's a good center back. He's a good, strong, young player, but he is not technically sound enough for me to
that's
be
a tough
a right
ask. Yeah, absolutely. That's a tough ask. And listen,
especially against Mexico.
Mexico, right? We keep saying this. That's like they're not just the best, you know, obviously a powerhouse in CONCACAF. They're a perennial World Cup team that gets into the quarterfinals. So it's nothing like, you know, teams like, you know, Italy. I know traditionally he has a tough time with Mexico. Doesn't have a good record against them. So
no,
I
mean, absolutely.
Give him a break
they're
there.
Tough. They're, you know, we keep. I said this to someone while I was watching the game yesterday, and I said we keep looking at the U.S. We keep looking at the U.S. for development. What are they doing there? You know, they've got to know a development academy team, development academy league. Maybe we should do that and all this and MLS and. You know, have we ever gone to Mexico?
Yeah,
and
it's not that far. Yeah,
producing some good players.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Marco.
You know, when's the last time the U.S. produced players that are played in La Liga? That played for Barcelona.
That's right.
Mexico's doing it.
Absolutely, and not just the obvious ones, right? You're right, Marco.
So they're head and shoulders above us, and yeah, spot on, Joel. They're not only a powerhouse in CONCACAF, but they're one of the stronger footballing nations in the world.
Yeah.
You know, so
what do you think,
gotta
Mark?
Respect them for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, Marco. What do you think about? For me, it was like I looked at the lineup and I said, okay, I think maybe he might be thinking this in Benito. Maybe we're gonna play a more aggressive game here. Look to use our athleticism here, and I thought maybe that would have been the way to go. Again, not forgetting a result. We just said it. Reggie said it. You've said it. And many pundits have said it. It's not about getting the result, but a better showing to give like some hope and so on. I thought the approach was going to be different. It seemed like the Mexicans had a ton of time on the ball. I know they're technically more sound than us, so it looks like they're going to have it. But it didn't look like I was looking more of a bully approach from us, if
like
that makes any sense.
Like a bully urgency.
Yeah.
I think we tried to come out high and press them.
Mm-hmm. They solved it.
You know, but I think it was more guys chasing rather than an approach where, okay, these are the areas we want Mexico to go, and these are the areas where
we're gonna win the
I
ball.
Think we can win the ball. Yeah. I've read on Twitter was like, you know, why were we so open, and, you know, they got past us easily, and maybe we should have just sat back and bunkered in, and, you know,
that never works out.
Two banks of four and work on the counterattack. I didn't mind the sort of approach where we're going to have a go at them at home and we want to try to press them high. I don't mind that. A lot of people are going to disagree with me.
No, I would like to see it more,
no,
Marco.
No, we should have bunkered down and two banks of four and sit on top of our 18-yard box and say, come and break us down. And maybe, you know, if they slip up at the back, we can nick one in the on the counterattack. But I kind of liked Floro saying, you know, yeah, we're going to press them high. We're at home. We're going to take the game to them. But at the end of the day, they were good. They were just
through us.
It's
Mexico.
We're open at the back.
Yeah.
And it's,
I mean,
so Chicharito. I think it could have been a bit more, sorry to cut you off.
No, sorry.
It could have been a bit more organized and more methodical. And pick your spots a little bit more. Yeah. But, I think they tried it at the beginning and they were just bypassing us every time. And then eventually, Joe, you can play that way for a spell. As far as I know, Atletico Madrid is probably the only team that can do it for 90 minutes where they just press the heck out of you and they do not give you time on the ball. But if you're going to play like that, there has to be long spells where you retain possession.
That's a good point.
So that your players can breathe.
That's a good point, Marco.
And we can press and we can chase, and, you know, we've got guys that are fit on the team and they'll run, but you can only do that for certain amounts of time.
True. Yes.
Without the ball. You need to be able to have the ball at certain points and keep it for 9, 10, 11, 12 passes, and not just keep it at the top of your box, but keep it in the attacking third, keep it in their half. Make 10 passes in their half. Gain some ground, gain some territory. Your defense can push up, your defenders get a breather. We can't do that. So, you know, we can try to press high, but at the end of the day, you can only do it for so long against a team that is going to make few mistakes. They're going to give a ball away a few times. Mm-hmm. So when you do get it, you've got to be able to keep it a bit. And we're at this point in time, we're not capable of it.
It's good that you say that, because it just didn't look like we were getting forward enough. And even when we had a break, and it would be Kyle Aaron 1-on-3. Right, nobody was getting forward, no support or anything like that. Yeah, even the
set pieces.
I saw three corners in a row, short corners. No one's in the box, and it's just I don't know.
And the first one in the second game, I thought, wow, okay, it came off. They got play back. I thought maybe get more bodies that way, but again, I think we're all saying the same thing.
Right.
Did we really think we were going to beat Mexico or get even a result? Right. So, but Marco, dare I say it? Like, I know I'm a little crazy for sure, but there is hope on the horizon. And those of us, you know, who are know, semi-involved with the coaching. You were very involved. I mean, there is hope, but it takes time. I know everyone's saying, well, what do you mean time? But we do have young players that are hopefully going to get us there. We talked about TFC2, how much that's a good thing. Our U20s, I know they just played England, you know, and beat them in, you know, 2-1 in a friendly, and everyone says it's a friendly, but, you know, and Marco, who's worked with a lot of these young players, like Michael Petrasso and so on, there is hope on the horizon. I mean, I'm not just being too optimistic. Am I being too idealistic here, Marco? I mean...
I think it's being too optimistic, actually. I think there's hope. I think there's a lot of good young Canadian players that... I think they're good players. I think people tell them they're great players and they get told a lot of things. Maybe, we've got to be realistic too. There's probably, and I said this to you earlier, players in Haiti that are probably better than
yes,
our players here.
Marco did say that to me.
Like,
yeah, I hear you.
I think we've just got to take a step back. You know, I said it with this current crop here, like Alarin, like Russell Tybert, like Donnie O'Henry.
Still want to see Osorio, you know, in
Ricketts,
there.
Not so much, but Akindele and some of the younger guys. And a Petrasso from the Olympic team, and a Jay Chapman, and, you know, even guys from this under-20 team that beat England 2-1. By the way, they lost in a closed-door game 3 days earlier.
Yeah, 4-1. No one talks about that one. Yeah, I think it was 3-0? No.
Yeah, 4-1, I think.
Oh, 4-1, yeah.
So anyway, what I'm saying is, yeah, we have to take them time, but I think if this current group wants to make a dent in CONCACAF soccer, it's on the players. I think it's on the players. Kyle Lahren needs to be, is he going to be an MLS scoring 15 goals a year, or is he going to be in La Liga scoring 15 goals for Villarreal? Is Jonathan Osorio going to be a part-time starter for TFC, or is he going to be an MLS All-Star perennial every year?
Mm-hmm.
Is Russell Tybert, same thing, off and on starter for Vancouver, or is he an All-Star in MLS? Donnie O'Henry, is he going to be loaned out to every club in England in a lower division?
Right. Or is he going to be a
starter for West Ham?
Yeah, is he going to get minutes?
If these younger guys, you know, is Michael Petrasso not going to, is he going to be with QPR in the Premier League in 5 years? And at 28, 29, 30, he's starting every match in the Premier League? You know, then we've got something.
Yeah.
But if it's like it is now, if at 28, 29, those players are having the careers they're having now, then I think it's more of the same. I think it's on the players. Are you doing what's possible? Yes, you're going to have to get those opportunities, but are you putting in the work, or are you going to get better where you can be in those positions? And that means it's all the better for Canada at the international level.
So that's the long term, right, Marco, for sure. I mean, I think Reggie and I agree, and we talked about that for sure. But what about
absolutely
in the short term? Marco, they played, you said it, positive. 54,000 people, packed BC Place, great environment, fantastic.
This drives right? me crazy.
But Marco, the only time we qualified, 1986 in Newfoundland, you know, and we could tell that weather.
Yeah.
Why don't we take advantage of that? I mean,
it drives me crazy.
Why not? Like, I'm not saying it's going to be a guarantee thing, but let's use home field advantage.
Why not?
I mean, look at, you know, and Conan Ball there with, you know, going to La Paz and playing Bolivia. Look at Brazil's record there. Not very good.
Yep.
Like, maybe, let's go for it. You know, like, hey, I mean, it can only help us.
I don't know.
I'm just, what do you think about that?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I think you also have to look at what's going to be the best environment for our own players.
They might suffer there too. You're right.
Going to play in Newfoundland in front of 500 people on turf that's probably older than me and you, Joe, is good. Like, is it good for our players? Are they going to get up for that game? So there's that argument. I think there's certainly the argument of finances.
Yes.
The CSA wants to make money. Yeah. I mean, they're an organization, they're a business essentially like any other.
Yeah.
So
they just
have a chance to put 54,000 bums
Mexico.
In seat,
yeah,
and rather than 20,000. What do you think they're going to do?
Yeah. You know, it's sad because I didn't even look at it like that. I just looked at it like, why aren't they playing, you know, put the Mexicans in the
point,
colder
Marco.
Weather. I never even thought about it as a business. Yeah. And I should. I'm an Arsenal fan. So I should
you know all about just about being business.
You know,
yeah.
Just about the soccer club being a business. I should have thought about that. You're absolutely right. But
no,
that's why
I mean, that's part of it. I mean, is it going to work? I don't know. Is it worth it? In the end, who knows?
Yeah,
but it's a fair point for sure. It's a fair point.
But when you were on the national team, and who decides where you play? Is it the CSA? Is it the coach saying, you know what, I don't want to play there, let's play here, or is it the CSA saying, no, you're going here and you're playing there?
That's a good question. I think for qualifying matches, I'm pretty sure it just comes down to the CSA making a decision where.
Okay.
This is going to be best for the players, and the coach is probably saying, you know, he's got his input, but I guess as a collective, they're saying, and I don't think that CSA is not thinking along your lines where are we going to have the best chance to win in regards to environment. I think they're thinking about that, but they also have to balance it with, well, we need to make money and we need to provide a good environment for our own players.
Right.
So I think as a collective, they decide. It used to be in a lot of the games used to be in Toronto, and Toronto's our national stadium, and it's got grass. But I guess the construction with the construction going on at BMO,
that
wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Montreal, you know, I think they had a couple of games there, but they won't get the support.
But doesn't Vancouver Whitecaps, don't they have an outdoor field? Isn't Empire Stadium outdoor grass?
They do, but I think
absolutely. Yeah, Empire's outdoor. No, it's not grass.
It's
turf. It holds.
30,
I don't know
30,
how
000,
much it holds.
Maybe?
I want to say maybe 15,000 to 18,000.
So it's still not maximizing what we're talking about. Right. Yeah.
But is it? You know, you've got to. Is it under? Is it? Does it have FIFA regulations?
Yeah.
I know they hosted some MLS games there. That was part-time. Does it have the infrastructure to have the TV cameras there and all that, you know, all that logistical stuff?
Because Marco
maybe
mentioned,
at a point it did when we were playing MLS games there, but does it now?
Right.
I don't think you can fault the CSA on this one. I think getting 54,000 people at a game,
yeah,
I think is a huge, huge positive. It means people care. People want to see the game. Yes, the result was a disappointment.
Again, it's Mexico, though, right? So, yeah.
But again, it's Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to go now. We play Honduras away, I believe.
In September, is it, Marco, or no?
Sorry?
I want to say it's in September.
It's in September, I think.
Yeah, I think it's...
I mean, we'll be in tough in Honduras.
Yeah.
Our last result there, oof, as if anyone needs reminding, it was
8-1,
8-0.
Oof. Oh, man.
In a game where a draw was enough. a draw will be enough here. You know.
What do we need, 4 points we need in the two games, they're saying? So,
I think we need 3 points for sure. You know, the way that I see it going down is Honduras will probably beat us. And that'll take them to 4 points. El Salvador will likely lose to Mexico. And then Honduras has Mexico away, I believe.
I think the last
Mexico.
Game. Yeah, the last game is, I think, that.
You don't
that's
go in
probably
in
a loss. So they're, you know, they'll stay at their points. And
if
we get a result against El Salvador, that means we're going to go through. So we'll see.
Well,
yeah.
If Mexico's home and dry by that time that last game comes through, it might not be a walk in the park for the Mexican team either.
I just don't see them losing
in
Mexico.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's not gonna be a walk in the park for us against El Salvador at home.
Yeah,
because they'll still have something to play for.
That's right.
If they win,
exactly,
they possibly can go through.
Right.
So I mean, if we beat El Salvador, I mean let's be honest, it's gonna be a 1-0 game.
Right.
If there's big goals in the game, if there's a lot of goals in the game, we're likely not to win. Right?
Yeah.
So, and I think it could come down to goal difference. I haven't done all the analytics behind it, but, you know, Honduras could end up with 7. They've got 4 now. We've got 4. They beat us at home. They're at 7.
Yeah.
We beat El Salvador at home. We're both at 7. I believe it comes down to goal difference after that. And then, you know, maybe a coin toss. Coin toss has been good to us in the past.
You know what? Yeah, absolutely. Gold Cup. Listen, Marco, I can do that. I can be the coin tosser for this. We can do it.
Yeah.
I've been training. I'm sound. I'm
that
ready.
We can take care of.
Marco, this has been well worth the wait. Hey, Reggie?
Yeah, for sure. Wow. Definitely. Some good information that we wouldn't get from anybody else.
Amazing. From the source.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, it was fun, guys. My pleasure. Anytime. Let me know. Just there's only a 4-week waiting list.
we love
you, Marco.
We gotta submit our application 4 weeks in advance. I got it.
Absolutely.
I got it.
Don't forget the envelope.
It's coming, Marco. I know how you work.
Well, Marco, thank you for joining us on the Football Weekly Podcast. We'll love to have you on in the future, in the summer, when things are going for you, and we can touch base on where Power Soccer is. And
sure.
thanks for taking the time with us.
Thanks, Marco.
My pleasure, guys. All right.
All right.
Thanks again.
No problem. Take care.
Take care.
So Marco Retta giving us gold.
No, that was great. That's typical Marco Retta. Just giving it to you real, right? Educating you, letting you know how it really is. Again, in a week where we talked about Canada, Mexico,
right?
We watched them play 2 international games. Right. What better person to have than someone who's played for Canada on the world stage and been in that environment? That was great.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Next week's show is going to be, we're back to normal, right, Joe?
We're getting back to normal. Flat 4.
Flat 4, goal of the week. We're going to talk EPL, Serie A.
All that stuff is back. Yeah. It's crunch time, Reg. It's getting down to the nitty gritty of all these leagues. So we got to talk about it.
Definitely talk about it. So Joe, I think we're done then, right?
We are done, Reggie. Again, we're looking forward to next week.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I can't wait to get back into the swing of things. This is a slow international week, and it's not because it's a slow international week. It's a slow international week because it's friendlies.
Yeah.
All the big games were friendlies, and who really cares about a friendly, right?
Yeah.
Right.
We need to get back to what we're doing. This is the nitty-gritty, like we said.
Yeah.
EPL coming down to it. Can your Gunners make an attempt?
So you see the clock, right?
It's still there,
it's
right?
Still dead, though, right?
Can they revitalize their title hopes?
There's not enough time for that. So
can AC Milan come out of 7th place? Listen, we need the leagues back, don't we, Reg?
No, we definitely.
Okay, we need them back.
Definitely need something to talk about. So, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.